You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DOEE. So today we're going to be discussing, is this the end to my camera gear addiction? So very big news in this episode for me. If you do listen too often, by the end of this episode, you'll probably be questioning if I have more money than brains. But we'll see how we go. Gonna do a very quick what I've been up to news and then the juicy main topic. So what I've been up to. So after last week's rant, there's been a big change to my camera gear. So that main topic will be all about that. Aside from that, I've already been out taking a lot of photos. Main topic will probably give more sense why. I've also managed to get back into my workout routine. So after I got back from my wedding, I got sick, and then yeah, there had been some rain and stuff, so I didn't get to go out. This week and even last week, I'm extremely sore. It's amazing just having that short break from working out really sort of kills your strength. Not sure if it's true. I can't remember the exact thing. I think if you take like 1 week off of working out, you lose like a month's worth of progress for strength. And it does seem like that to me, but you can get it back fairly quickly as well. Like the muscle memory or whatever stays there. I notice, you know, each week I'm getting a bit stronger again. So which is good to see. And I want to get back into it as much as I can and just keep working out. Aside from that, it's pretty much just been work, writing articles. This post will actually have an article to go along with it. Not really photo heavy. It's more just a written version of it. I was writing it as a written post, but then I got to the point where, hey, I'll just do the podcast on this topic. I got a bit sidetracked as well. I still got like two or three more photos to edit from Bali. Once I'm done with that, I can start finishing off the Fuji review because I got a ton of photos for Fuji now, enough to be able to give myself a real sort of impression. And then once I'm done with that, I already know what the next sort of thing I'm going to be working on. I got a few small articles I need to release as well, like best cityscape locations in Sydney, that kind of stuff. Winter's pretty much coming to an end, so that'll be the last of my cityscape shooting for a while, so I'm going to make the most of it. Otherwise, I think that's it for what I've been up to, is getting the main into the news, sorry. The first piece of news, just a quick one, Panasonic and Leica are planning to launch a jointly developed mirrorless camera. So Panasonic will release a mirrorless camera that it will jointly develop with Leica in about a year. That is a result of the expanded partnership between the two brands that they signed in May. So this was discovered by Nikkei in a report that found not only has Panasonic ceased production of Lumix brand compact cameras, but it also would be more focusing on the high-end market, which includes leveraging its partnership with Leica to produce co-developed mirrorless camera next year. So, you know, stuff like their mirrorless cameras, it looks like they're going to be fully focusing on now, like their S5 and that kind of stuff. And a direct quote in the article was provided, which says, "We are planning to release a mirrorless machine jointly developed with Leica Camera, which we formed a comprehensive partnership with at the end of May in about a year." So it'll be interesting what it turns out like. Because, you know, with Sony, originally when they had their partnership with Zeiss, from what I've read, it was Sony developing the lens. It's just Zeiss giving a bit of advice on it. Whether it's like that for this as well, Leica's just giving them some tips on how to do stuff and not really doing much, but they're putting their name on it, you know, for that brand recognition sort of stuff, or if they actually are really co-designing it together. I imagine it will be quite pricey being part Leica, but I guess we'll see maybe May next year what it comes of it. Either way, more cameras, more fun, more stuff to talk about, more competition, always good. So next up, Tamron has announced development of a new 20-40mm f2.8 zoom for Sony email cameras. So once again, Tamron has announced they're developing this lens. The forthcoming lens is expected to launch in fall of 2022. So not all details are provided at the moment, but they did give a few little bits. So the lens will use Tamron's Voice Call Extreme Torque Drive, their XVD linear motors, for autofocus. It'll have a minimum focusing distance of 17 centimeters, otherwise known as 6.7 inches. Tamron says the lens will be compatible with many camera-specific features and functions, including fast hybrid AF and IAF. It has a 67mm filter thread. The design will include a moisture-resistant construction, as well as fluorine coating on the front most elements to repel debris and dust and water. It'll weigh roughly 365 grams, and no pricing info has been provided on that. So from what I read, they actually did have a 20 to 40 millimeter in the past, so this is sort of like a new updated version of it. It'll be interesting to see exactly, you know, what this lens quality will be like. I think it's good how they do keep adding more and more lenses. This seems more like a reasonable zoom to me compared to some of their other more stranger focal lengths. They're doing well profit-wise, so I assume whatever they're doing is popular and working for them, so I guess that's good, but it would be cool to see once they start doing some more normal lenses. And, you know, me personally, I'd love to see primes like 50mm f1.4, that kind of stuff, but I don't think we'll see it anytime soon with the pattern they're on. But they are on a roll, they're releasing so many lenses. Next up, so Sigma has announced a 20mm f1.4 DGDN lens for L-mount and Sony E-mount cameras. So this is the mirrorless successor to the DSLR version. The lens is constructed of 17 elements and 15 groups, Sigma's nano porous coating MPC, as well as a water and oil repellent coating. It has 11 bladed rounded aperture diaphragm, f1.4 to f16 is the aperture range. Has a minimum focusing distance of 23 centimeters or 9.1 inches, 82mm front filter thread, a stepping AF motor, physical aperture ring that can be clicked or declicked, a focus mode switch, rear filter holder and manual focus lock switch, dust and splash resistant, 630 grams is the weight with the L-mount version being only 5 grams more, and will be available for $899 in late August. So far, you know, this does look like a pretty decent lens. The size of it is a bit heavy. If you really need f1.4, I'm sure this would be like an amazing lens for any astrophotographer. On Sony, at least, you have the 20mm f1.8G lens, which is really good lens, very small. It's even sharper than the 24 1.4GM, so I guess this will be the main competition for it. $899 USD, I'm not sure how much it'll be AUD, I'm guessing probably around that $1,000 mark, 1,000 AUD, which I believe you can get the 20mm for around 1,200, so which one you go for, really be up to you and what your preference is, if you really want that extra two-thirds of a stop aperture. If not, then maybe the, you know, Sigma or the Sony would be better for you, it's up to you. I don't see myself getting a lens like this, mainly because I'm sort of done with primes on the wide zone. I prefer zooms in a certain range because, you know, with ultra wide, it's a bit harder to sort of recompose by your feet. 35, 55, 50 sort of thing, 85, all those you can sort of recompose with your feet, but the wider or the longer you get, the harder it gets. Well, mainly, especially for wide, because, you know, difference between 15 and 20 millimeters is insane, but the difference between 100 and 105 millimeters is negligible. Next up, Sigma announces the 24mm f1.4 DGDN lens for L-mount in the E-mount camera system. So just like the other one, it has 17 elements in 14 groups, a stepping AF motor, physical aperture ring that can be clicked or declicked, focus mode switch, rear filter holder and manual focus lock switch. It is also dust and splash resistant, 11 bladed rounded aperture diaphragm, minimum focusing distance of 25 centimeters, rear filter holder and a 72mm filter thread, is dust and splash resistant and 510 grams, but the L-mount is 10 grams more, and it'll be available for $799 in late August. Now this one, it has a Sony GM equivalent, which would be the 24mm f1.4. I know that one usually goes for $1,399 USD, so this is like nearly half the price, so this would be a very compelling option. I believe the Sony one's around 400 grams. I'm not 100% sure. I remember it's light. It's quite small and light. I remember it's somewhere around that 400 or 500 grams. So because of that, that means, you know, this one's not that much heavier as well, which is very impressive. Maybe this one might be the slightly more popular than the 20mm. That's just my opinion. What I think would be more popular, mainly because 24 is a bit more of a versatile focal length than 20, mainly because you can sort of do portraits if you know how to sort of compose him really well. I think his name's Chris Turner on YouTube. I don't know if he's a Sony ambassador or not. I think he was in the Sony program before. But anyway, he's in New Zealand. He uses 24 for everything, for his weddings and that, and his photo is amazing. He's really good at using that 24 and not making it seem so wide, whereas when I use 24mm, it just felt too wide to me. I was too used to 35mm. And it's quite funny because when I watched his review of the 35GM, He did mention that 35mm was so tight for him and it looked too narrow, whereas I felt the opposite, you know? So it really shows that whatever focal length you're used to, everything else will look quite different. You know, 50, if you're used to using 50, 35 would look too wide, 35, 50 looks too narrow, that kind of stuff. So that's it for the news. I went through it pretty quick, but main topic will be the juicy part, so let's get into it. So it's been a very interesting, somewhat expensive Fortnite in a way. We'll get more into that, but last episode, as you know, it was just keeping it casual, just discussing some random stuff. I was saying, you know, how I kind of wasn't too happy with certain aspects of the cannon gear lineup. You know, I didn't go into the pricing debate because I didn't want to do that again, but that was one aspect. You know, when it comes to the cannon lineup, I didn't know what to do. I was unhappy with my RF 16mm and I didn't know what I wanted to go for the 14 to 35, which I was quite sure I was going to get at one stage. But me being me, I kept thinking about it, kept looking over it, researching ultra wide angle lenses. And the more I looked at it, the more I just thought, I'm going to swap back to Sony, or I'm going to swap brands. You know, there's so much more compelling. Nikon got a good one, Sony got a good one. So I ended up listing all my Canon gear. All my Canon lenses are gone, every single one of them. All I have left at the moment I'm still trying to sell is the R6. That one I don't want to lose too much money on, so I'm trying to get like a decent, a fair price for it because it's in really good condition. So, you know, hopefully it'll be sell that. But when it comes down to why I swap, so when I looked at my gear lineup, so I own the 16, the 35, 50, 85, and the 100 to 400. The only lens I really, really liked was the 35. The 50, so say the 16, it's a bit too soft, and I found that having a 60mm prime, which I thought was really good, was a lot harder to use than I thought, mainly just because, you know, it's not as versatile. The 50, I actually really liked. The bokeh was really nice. The rendering was really good. The size was amazing. It's just the sharpness. It wasn't as good as the 35 or the 85. The 85mm f2 IS, so it's a nice lens. If all I did, say my whole purpose for that lens, my profession was just product photography, that would be the only lens that I ever need, and it would do excellent, amazing for that main use. But if you look at it as, say, like a portrait or a street photography lens, f2 isn't that great. Like, you know, you're not going to get as much of a shallow depth of field. It'll have a very different look. It won't get that same pop as the f1.4 lens. And then if you look at it as, say, a macro lens, it's only a half macro, not full 1:1. And I find that not only being full 1:1, you don't get that same magnification, so the objects aren't as big, but at 85mm, it's a bit shorter as well. So a lot of stuff that I try to do macro of with it, the items weren't showing big enough or real life. Because of that, you know, it just didn't really suit everything. The 100 to 400, now that lens, I would say that was actually a really good lens. So in terms of sharpness, image quality was amazing. So autofocus, that was absolutely amazing as well. Super silent, that nano USM motor, if that was in the 35, I think the 35 would be an amazing lens, like a complete lens. And, you know, assuming you didn't have a front element that protrudes out, goes outside the body sort of thing. But I think my main issue with that lens is nothing to do with the quality of the lens. It's just my use. I couldn't get enough use for it. In Sydney, like, I don't think we need that. We're sort of very in the middle range. Any kind of photography I would do, like a cityscape, which is what I would use the lens for, 85 is usually good enough for most locations. You could probably go a little bit further. Like, I have shot at 400mm doing more zoomed in sort of stuff, but nothing full city. Otherwise, I just didn't feel like I used that lens enough to justify it. But if I did bird photography and I was actually good at it, which I'm not, that is really, really good lens. Like, hypothetically, if I ever went back to Canon, that's a lens that I would have no issue with rebuying. But pretty much that and the price. Just Canon Australia, I think the US Canon, they do charge a bit more, maybe equivalent to what thing, but I just can't deal with Canon's pricing. Do I hate Canon? No. Do I think that Canon make really great cameras and really great lenses? Yes. But do I think their pricing is fair and competitive? Hell no. Now, what I swapped to. So I'm probably sure it wouldn't be surprising to hear that I swapped back to the Sony Alpha A7 Mark IV. I know all the probably my Canon listeners that, you know, listening probably hate me. I'm dead to them and all that kind of stuff. I'm sorry. Don't worry. I'm not going to turn into a Sony fanboy. I, you know, will give some impressions later, which is more in Canon's favor, to be honest. But, you know, doesn't change what I am. You know, when I was shooting Canon, I wasn't anti-Sony, and now that I'm shooting Sony, I'm not anti-Canon. That's not how I do things. I don't believe in brand bias. If I had the money, I'd probably still keep the Canon and keep it with the 100 to 400, but sadly, you know, I don't have the money. But technically, if I had the money, I probably would have bought like the RF 85 1.2L, that kind of stuff. But either way, so why I chose this camera? So Obviously, I own the A7 Mark III. I don't know if I had it when I first started making this podcast. I think I started doing this podcast like just... Yeah, I still had it. So yeah, I've been shooting Sony when I originally started this, so that's no different. So obviously, I'm used to Sony colors, I'm used to the Sony body, the Sony ecosystem, and the A7 IV is a upgrade over the A7 Mark III. Although it wasn't wasn't the biggest upgrade, when you look at the A7 II to the A7 III, that was like a revolutionary upgrade. Whether you love them or hate them, the A7 III was a industry-changing body. It offered so much for such a little price just to get everyone to swap over, which it worked a lot, you know? Whereas the A7 IV, it wasn't as big of an upgrade, it more of a refinement, which I personally like. I'm really happy with it so far. But, you know, in terms, you know, it had everything I needed, the fully articulating screen, the EVF was the same resolution as the R6. Sadly, the rear screen isn't, but it had real-time tracking, so better autofocus, had quite a bit. And it was quite the closest in performance and price to the R6 as well. So that's another reason why it was sort of easy thing. Now, when it comes to the lenses, so currently I own, there's my three lens lineup that I have planned. Two of them I own, the third one I'm not buying till later in the year. So the first lens that I bought with the camera is the Sony FE 35mm f1.4 GM. Now let me tell you, this lens was not easy to get. A lot of stores were sold out of it and were telling me 3-4 weeks for them to get it in. Luckily, I managed to find a store that had stock and they were willing to price match a store that didn't have stock. So that was easy for me. Now, why did I go for this lens? So say I'm on Canon and I want a 35 1.4. At the moment, my only option on Canon would be either to adapt the Sigma, which I don't, you know, I don't want to adapt. I want to go pure, prefer to go pure native. And if I did, I guess I could get the old Sigma 35 1.4 Art, which is quite heavy by itself. It's around 600 something grams. Then plus the adapter, say like another 1500 grams. It's already up there. The next option would have been, you know, obviously my 35 1.8, great lens, but we're talking about 1.4. So if I wanted to go for the Canon EF 35mm L2, I do remember at one stage it was a lot cheaper. It was around, you know, 2000 AUD, 2200, that kind of stuff. Currently, the cheapest I could probably see it for was around 2800 AUD, which is a lot of money, otherwise known as 1999 USD. Now, that may sound like, oh yeah, but it's a professional glass, it's 35L. Considering it's older than the Sony, and you know, I'm assuming at least the Sony is a better performing lens in terms of sharpness, all that kind of stuff, it's very expensive. Whereas I bought the 35GM for only 1800 AUD, so that's $1,000 less than I paid for the 35 L2, which is insane. Otherwise, you know, $1,399 USD, which I'm sure you in the US would already know the price of that. So yeah, I'm very, very happy with that purchase. The actual 35GM itself, amazing. In terms of this next lens I bought, this should be an easy one. I always go on about it, which is the Sigma 85mm f1.4 DN Art. Now, obviously, if I'm looking at what options I had on Canon, I could have got the old Sigma lens, which is like 15 kilos kind of thing, like this massive lens, which I'm not going to do. Otherwise, if I wanted to get, you know, the Sigma Art lens, that one is 1,199 USD. Now get this, I bought it for 1,155 AUD. Usually that is 1,359 AUD, but eBay always do sales and you can get it even cheaper. And it's like a genuine one, not gray. It actually comes from Sigma's supplier, C.R. Kennedy. Whereas if I wanted, you know, say for example, the Canon EF 85mm f1.4L, which was a nice lens, but I have to adapt it, that one was $1,599 US dollars or 2,398 AUD. So mine's only already $1,000, more than $1,000, $1,200 cheaper. Now you may say, yeah, but that's a third party lens. Of course it's going to be cheaper. Well, the Sony 85GM, which is probably, I'm pretty sure it's newer. It's not the best lens, but it is newer than the Canon one. That one is 1774 AUD on sale, pretty much. So obviously a lot cheaper. Not sure about the US pricing, but I know it's around 1700 AUD if I wanted to get that. And obviously, even if you look at the F2 Canon lens, that one's 997 brand new. AUD, that is, sorry. So if I'm buying that, I could spend an extra like just $200 pretty much and get the 85 Art, which is honestly one of the greatest lenses I've ever used. Now you're starting to see a little bit of a trend here with the pricing. You can get a lot better glass for a lot cheaper. Now I don't have this lens yet and I'm trying to resist just buying it for the sake of buying it because I don't need it yet. But the third lens I plan to get, maybe with the end of year sales or Black Friday, that kind of stuff, Boxing Day we have here, will be the Sony FE PZ Power Zoom 16-35 f4G. Now this is really the lens, that the straw that broke the camel's back. The wide angle that I was really interested in that made me and convinced me to swap over. So when I was shooting Canon, so my options, A, keep the 16mm prime, which I wasn't too fond of. And then if I'm sticking with Canon, I could have paid $17.99 for the EF 16-35L, or which is $12.99 USD. The problem I had with that is I previously bought that lens for 1,000 AUD, so $800 cheaper, which I do not plan to pay $800 more for an old mount lens that I already own for much cheaper, so that was not an option. Next up was the RF 14-35 F4L, so that one was 2,400 AUD or 1,649 USD. Now, this lens does look good to me, the size, weight, you know, it's a 14mm, but you can use front filter threads, all that kind of stuff. Weight is around 600 grams or something. Very reasonable. Everything about it specs-wise is good. Even image quality is good, but price I cannot justify. Now, I could pay 2,400 AUD for that lens. Keep in mind there is a range difference, obviously. Or I could get the Sony 16-35 PZ for 1580 AUD, so almost $1,000 cheaper, or 1,198 USD. So yeah, almost $1,000 cheaper for a newer lens that, from what I've seen on reviews from like the Digital Picture and that, is actually sharper than the RF lens. Smaller, it's only 390 grams, which is be like amazing for travel. So I could use that combo, or I could pay more, you know, $1,000 more, nearly $1,000 more for something heavier, albeit wider, you know, more expensive. I just don't see the point. That, you know, to me, even the Sigma, I can, the Sigma 16-28 f2.8 lens, if I needed 2.8, which I don't, is around, I think I can get about $1,000 AUD when it goes on sale from that Sigma dealer as well. So as you can see, by swapping the Sony, I managed to buy all f1.4 lenses, like professional quality, excellent quality. Sony's, you know, GM lens, Sony's top quality. That Sigma 85 Art, if it was, if you convert it to Sony, you know, it'll be a GM. Convert it to Canon, it will be an L. I don't know what Sony's Nikon's ones are. I know they use a Nikkor or something, or L. No, sorry, Nikkor. I don't even know what their version is, but it would be the top lens, you know? And then that 16-35 PZ, amazing lens. That one's a G lens, so not quite the GM it's between, but either way, it's really great. You know, even if I went for Canon, say there's the new option, the 15-30, that one's like 5.6 to 6.3, so a lot slower. So when I use it for stuff like family events, that's when I usually need that wide zoom. F4 is a whole of a lot better than, say, 6.3 if I needed that. That one, even that one, is $999 USD. Obviously, 500 more for the 16-35, but it's a much higher quality lens. Even the 16-28 from Sigma is like maybe $50 more when it goes on sale, max. And that's a 2.8 16-28. Much better value. So, yeah, I got much better quality glass for much cheaper. So, I have zero regret. I said in the past, certain lenses from Sony didn't have as nice rendering as Canon. Stuff like the 35-18, the 85 FE-18. Whereas, you know, the 85 Art Sigma, one thing they do know from trying to be like Canon all those years is rendering. Same thing for the 35 GM when I use it, it's beautiful. I will say though, that the 35 GM makes me realize the RF 35-18 is an absolutely amazing lens. Just in terms of image quality, the rendering on that, the sharpness, I could honestly say it matches the, probably matches the GM for sharpness. It is extremely, extremely good, that lens. Excellent value. If Canon had put that, say, you know, say they don't do G lenses, but if they had made that like a little bit bigger so that way that front element doesn't push out, gave it a nano USM motor, charge like 1000 AUD, I think that would be one of the greatest 35mm lenses at the moment, but they went a different route. And I was lucky, you know, even though it sounds like I spent a lot of money, because I had five lenses and I'm dropping down to like two or three, I'm not really actually out of pocket, especially because a lot of Canon, they keep putting their prices up, so I could sell them for not as much of a loss. Also, the R6 price has gone up again, and the A7 price had actually gone down, so it balanced out quite a bit. That's assuming, you know, once I sell my R6, which is the hard part. But that won't take long, I'm sure. It's in excellent condition. If anyone's in Sydney and wants to buy one, happy for you to come check it out. Let me know, reach out to me on Twitter. Otherwise, this is the part people probably want to hear. Early impressions of how the A7 IV compares to the R6. So first and foremost, autofocus. When I got the A7 IV out of the box, I wasn't disappointed, but I wasn't impressed by the autofocus. It definitely, compared to the R6, it definitely wasn't as great. Now, in saying that, with some setting changes, so if you've used the R-body or the R5 or the R6, you know there's cases for, when you're using servo, there's AF cases. So case one is like a general use, case two locks on and does not let go no matter what, case three, you know, four, whatever. I was always using case two, so I'm used to the autofocus locking on really well and not letting go. Whereas Sony, by default, it's set to like, you know, balance, not really lock on too much or not let go very easy. So I was not impressed by the autofocus. Once I changed it to make sure it's set to fully locking on and stays, it's really good. I would say in terms of normal tracking, it can match the R6 in my like limited people walking, faces, moving, that kind of stuff. I haven't done any wildlife because I don't really have the lens to do wildlife, but from what I can see, it can match the R6 in that regard, but the R6 has better eye autofocus. The R6 can get the eye from like a more further angle. Even though it's just a box, it may be focusing on the same spot. I noticed that initiates from further away and it sort of does it from more extreme side angles on that better compared to the Sony. So the R6 definitely does have that slight edge in terms of autofocus, but it's not like it's a night and day difference. Getting very, very close, I'd say they're neck and neck. So in terms of ISO performance, I actually do believe the Canon is better. I feel like the Canon has less noise at higher ISOs, you know, like up to say a few thousand, 1600, 32. I feel like the Canon was cleaner, but there is like a certain character to Canon's noise pattern that just makes it seem softer, I think, compared to Sony's. So that could be the difference. Either way, the Sony's not bad, but you do have to keep in mind as well, the higher the pixel count, you know, the higher the megapixels, which the Sony is 33 megapixels, you know, 13 megapixels more means smaller pixels. So less, each individual pixel can absorb less light, which means you are not going to have as good a high ISO performance compared to the R6, which is only 20 megapixels. If you compared them, I'd say, you know, in reasonable sense, like they are very, very similar, slight edge to the Canon as well. Now for dynamic range, this is probably a big one for most people. I don't really do any major tests like underexposing by four stops and lifting up to look for noise. All I do is I go out, I shoot, and I edit. I would say that I think the Sony is probably matching with the Canon. They're very equal, but it's hard to tell for one very reason. So with the Canon, as you would know, if you're using an R body, like a, well, maybe not the older Rs, but if you're using an R5, R6, R3, they favor the, you know, highlights a lot more. You have to prioritize highlights, because the highlights do blow very easy. So when I was shooting on Canon, I found myself, you know, past few years, as always tending to expose for the highlights just very safely, not even overexposing, just exposing them perfectly and always just pulling the shadows because I was always so scared of blowing the highlights. Whereas because, you know, with, as I've mentioned and complained several times, the Canon doesn't have zebra highlight warnings or blinkies, you know, which if you don't know what those are, those will tell you in live view. So say you're about, you know, you're composing a photo, a portrait of someone. If you increase your exposure and you can see these, you know, zebra lines blinking, that means that you're about to blow your highlights. So with Sony, they have zebra highlight warnings. One of the features I really, really miss from Canon. I mean, from Sony when I was shooting Canon. So say, you know, now I find my photos are much better exposed because I'm pretty much going as high as I possibly can with the highlights. Say I'm at ISO 100 f1.4. I'm putting my shutter speed up as high as it can go. As soon as I see that those blinkies, you know, the zebras, I dial it down one third of a stop till they disappear. That's it. I take the photo. And then in post, I still have all that highlight detail. I just got to pull down the highlight slider and that's it. So because of that, I find I'm actually editing less. And, you know, obviously I'm getting much cleaner images in a sense because I can expose within that range. So that is a very, very useful feature that's actually making it better for me. Now colors, this one's a controversial one. So everyone loves Canon for their colors. For me personally, I actually did miss Sony colors and I like Sony colors better. You may be shocked. Now, if you're shooting JPEGs and all that kind of stuff, or you do very minimal editing, the Canon is probably better for you in all honesty. I don't think that Sony, say I like the Sony better, but I'm not saying that their colors are better. So with me, I tend to desaturate and then edit change the colors, and then once I add more contrast, that obviously brings the saturation back to a certain amount. The way I see it is Canon colors are way more vibrant. So even if you're shooting RAW, you know, like you still got a lot stronger colors in the RAW files. So it's not like you're starting with a blank canvas, but Sony files, they're not super, you know, flat, but they're a bit flatter for me in the sense where I find I can easier shape their colors. They're more reactive to stuff like color grading. For me personally, that's what I find anyway with my technique, the way I do it. So I've personally found the editing process with Sony quite a bit easier. So I'm happy for that. In terms of lens performance, as I mentioned, I would say image quality wise, 35GM matches the RF. Autofocus wise, I do much prefer the 35GM because it's silent. And the build quality, it feels like a very nice, rugged, professional kind of build lens. The 85Art wipes the absolute floor with the Sigma. You know, I walked around with the 85 F2, and nothing really interests me when I use it. Whereas using the 85Art, just the rendering is beautiful. I'm going to have some photos out on my blog very soon with the 85Art once I can finish editing them all. But that lens is honestly phenomenal. I think I even like it more than the 35GM. It's just such a, like, I could literally do an episode about how much I love the 85 Art. You know, I could divorce my wife and marry the 85 Art because it's that great. But don't tell her I said that. But yeah, that lens is absolutely phenomenal. From everything, the bokeh, the sharpness, the autofocus, just it's the total package. In terms of accessories, I've had to order everything else again. So I've ordered my new L bracket. I use small rig L brackets. I find for the price, they offer the best quality and they're usually much more reasonable than a lot of the other brands. Sadly, I don't know why, but Sony removed, well, a lot of cameras that seem to be doing it, but they removed the IR sensor, the infrared sensor in the A7 Mark IV, which the A7 III had. So those cheap like $10 IR remotes do not work anymore. Although it is annoying, they never really work that great at the same time because, you know, you need line of sight for them to work. And I got used to using the Bluetooth remote on Canon, which works a lot better because, you know, being Bluetooth, you can trigger it through a wall, that kind of stuff sometimes. Not a very thick wall, but you know, you get what I mean. Like if you're in one room from the other, you could probably trigger it. The Sony version is a lot more expensive, probably double the cost of Canon, but I ordered one anyway because I need one. This camera sadly doesn't have a bulb timer. So if I want to do bulb mode, I'll technically need that if I don't want to use my phone, which I don't want to do. Otherwise, I've had to order the Godox X Pro S. It's better ordering another trigger rather than just, you know, having to buy all new flash gear. So that's not really a bother for me as well. And I bought a third-party brand battery charger because if you know, the Sony doesn't come with one. It does come with a cable to charge your camera through the camera, you know, through USB-C, which is pretty good to be honest. I can see why they wouldn't include it, although I would prefer the standalone battery charger like Canon and that and include. It's still a decent method. That's how I charge my Fuji, but it's like $20 on Amazon, this Neewer, N-E-E-W-E-R, I think it is. Their dual battery charger. It's really good. It even has an indicator so you know how much it's charged. Otherwise, yeah, accessory-wise, really good. Now, obviously, as you know me, I'm not going to stick with these free lenses. I'm going to not sell them, but I'm really, really honestly hoping to stick with these lenses for years and not swap. Well, in all honesty, like the 85Art, I don't think anything can beat it unless there's a 35GM Mark II and 85Art Mark II, which I doubt they're not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. But aside from that 16-35PZ, there are a few lenses I want to get. So mainly, I'm sort of more focusing on adding a telephoto lens. I haven't really decided what I'll get, whether I'll get, like originally I thought I would get the Sigma 105mm DN Art lens because that, you know, I need a macro lens and that lens I like better than the Sony, mainly because of the way it shapes its specular highlights and it's a bit sharper, I think. Now that's if I just want to do more product photography. I plan to use the 85Art for product photography and see how well that works. And, you know, if I can crop and just make it look like that, you know, don't because it's 33 megapixels, I can just use something to increase the resolution and crop it. That could work. Otherwise, maybe I'll get like something like a 70-300 from either Sony or Tamron. The Tamron version is a lot cheaper and a lot lighter, but I don't know if it's as optically as good on the long end. I think I don't need to 400. 70-300 would be really good. If I was into wildlife, there's even the Tamron 150-500. That lens looks really good. Tamron's got so many good zooms though. But otherwise, my preference when I eventually add a fourth lens, which I don't see anytime soon, would be something either 105Art or the 70-300. Aside from that, there's a few Samyang lenses that caught my eye. So the 50mm f1.4 Mark II. So that one is only about 850 AUD. image quality looks to be really nice. So I got more used to 50mm while shooting Canon because of that tiny RF 50mm. So that's, you know, a lens that I'd be very much interested in. But at the same time, I really love my 35. I really love my 85. I don't feel the need for something between right now anyway. So I think I'll just stick with those two. But if there is ever a time where I feel like I need it, I know at least there's a cheap option. And I'm sure the next lens from Sigma would probably be a 50mm DN Art. Hopefully f1.4, not f1.2. If f1.2, that would be very, very tempting if it's like not too expensive, you know, 1500 AUD, I would actually consider it. Otherwise, there's also the Samyang 135mm, a nice cheaper alternative to the GM lens, which is around 2300. That 135 does appear to look pretty good as well. That would be another, that's like a tele option for me if I wanted that, but I don't know. I think it's a bit too much of a specialty lens. I could probably get more use out of the macro because of its close focusing than I could the 135 or the 7300 would get more use as well. So it's just like, I'm really going to take my time for that one. I don't have a need for it at the moment anyway. That Sigma would probably be it. I'd say that's the leading one, maybe the 7300, but otherwise, yeah, we'll see how we go with those. Otherwise, the 35-85 combo, I know I can capture pretty much everything I need to with those two. And once I add the 16 and the 35, that one's mainly for travel or if I need really wide, like family events, that kind of stuff. But that one will be amazing for travel. I can just carry that the whole day and then just swap to, say, the 85 if I want something longer or if I really want to get something, some bokehlicious shots, like, you know, but small, wide, prime, then that's where the 35 GM comes in. Otherwise, I think I talked enough. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Let me know what you think about my gear switching. Reach out to me on Twitter or something, or message me on Flickr, that kind of stuff. Tell me, do you think I'm crazy for swapping brands? If you know you're unhappy with the price of Canon, you're thinking of doing it, want my advice, reach out, let me know. I can give you advice. Happy to help. Happy to just talk photography as well if anyone wants to reach out. Otherwise, if you'd like to hear more episodes, you can subscribe and find them at thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you want to, you know, follow us on Twitter. I don't really post there too much, so I understand if you didn't, but otherwise I do post on Twitter a lot for my personal. You can follow me at photos by DLEE and my website, my blog, where I release all the photos that I talk about. So I'm not just someone that talks about photography, but never actually takes photos. If you go there, you can see my photos, photosbydlee.com. I'm actually on Reddit. I actually made a photos by DLEE Reddit account as well, because sadly, you know, people don't use forums as much as they used to. So that's why I'm starting to get into try and use Reddit as well to post my photos. I know it's a different crowd compared to forums and that, but either way, I'm giving it a try. So you can find me photos by DLEE on Reddit as well. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Take care. Don't be crazy and sell all your gear and buy another stuff within 2 weeks like me. And I'll see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you. See ya.